It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Hockey! Yeah!
My favorite.
It's Judd's Hockey Show.
A lot of boots in game two of the qualifying round. They, of course, won on Sunday night. They lose 4-3. And Declan, you know, I was taking notes and I was all prepared to come on this late night or actually early morning show with you today. And I was actually going to say, you know, 4-1, the Wild lose, blah, blah, blah. There's probably not a lot to talk about here. Certainly not as good a game for the lads as they played on Sunday. And full disclosure, so I wrote down a list of names of Wild players, and it's not very long, but in the third period, I started to jot down some names of guys I need to see more from, right? Galchenyuk had a bad game. He's on my list. Zuccarello, your guy, just continues to not be there. I don't know if he just decided not to go to the bubble and sent a replacement who's wearing his jersey or what. But the third name that I was going to broach, and it's not because he had a terrible game, but he can be far superior, was Kevin Fiala. And then Kevin Fiala, it's 4-1, takes a shot, a laser, and it's 4-2. And then he takes another one with what I've got it here, 7.7 seconds left in the third period, and it's 4-3. Long story short, I'm going to show you right now. Here's my trusty pen, and here are my notes. And I'm going to scribble out the name of Kevin Fiala as far as guys who didn't do their job. Interesting game. The weird thing is Brad Hunt took that last shot of the game. It actually handcuffed Markstrom.
Yeah.
And he had to make, it wasn't a nice save, but he actually somehow turned that into a difficult save. Just a weird finish to a game that I would say, if you're the Wild, wasn't real satisfying. But we can talk about this. I would also say that the game was not a surprise. Like, the Wild played a great game on Sunday. The Canucks didn't look, it's not that they didn't look like they were there, Declan, on Sunday in game one. The Canucks just didn't look as prepared, and the Wild had every answer at every turn in that game. Tonight, those top six on the Canucks are good. So you can't be surprised that Vancouver bounced back. And when Elias Pettersson plays well, I got news for you. It can be some trouble. If Fiala's playing well for the Wild and Pettersson is playing well for the Canucks, the Wild might not win the series, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Look, this is exactly, I think, the expectation we thought that would happen from Vancouver. The Wild dominate game one. And any person, take out your common sports fan for a minute, Judd, and any person who knows hockey knows that Vancouver was probably going to come out ready to go from the get-gate. From the gate. And of course, what happens? Opening shift, Vancouver comes out, scores on the first shot they have of the game. And then, yes, the Wild were able to even it up. My guy, Luke Cunnan, gets a great big game tying goal. And, you know, I was, as I told you when before the pause, which feels like, what, Judd, 5 years ago, but it was really only like 5-6 months ago. Mm-hmm. I was really admiring what Luke Cunnan was able to do. So when he gets that power play goal, he passes up a shot in that power play beforehand earlier in the first period. He then absolutely takes his shot for that second time on a shorthanded opportunity, mind you. And you see, okay, it's 1-1. Vancouver mostly kind of dominated play in that first period, but you're tied. At the end of this, you're tied. So after 20 minutes, this is a win if you're the Wild. And then, unfortunately, And I hate to be this guy, but it felt like a three-way game. It was Minnesota and Vancouver versus the referees, and there was a penalty called on everything. And I don't know, Judd, if it's just because of the pause. So they told the referees, you're going to see a lot of things that you normally would have probably have not had called in a regular season or in a normal playoffs. But because you've been off for 6 months, you're going to see stick infractions. Oh, my God, how many stick infractions did we see over the course of this game tonight? And it just felt like a three-way game to the point where the Wild get two. I don't want to call them meaningless goals, but they get two goals in the final minute. So the score looks a lot closer. But it felt like the Wild were battling against two teams tonight, and it was the referees and Vancouver.
But the Canucks had the same problem. In fact, I said when I think it was within the first 5 minutes of tonight's game, the Canucks got two penalties. I said, this is a problem. It was a three-way game, but the Canucks and Wild were both, I mean, neither team got jobbed. In fact, the final power plays, the Canucks 1-for-7, Wild 0-for-6. So it was equal. It just drives me crazy because these, and it is clearly, I don't care what they say, it is a league mandate. There have been way too many of these games thus far. They're going to call everything, and I don't know why. My guess is the league came back and said the pause is probably going to cause some problems for offenses, right? And we want goals, like the qualifying round. We want people to tune in and see 7-6 games. So it feels like they told the officials, call everything you possibly can to jack up the amount of goals as much as possible. But if I'm both teams, this now is going to be the norm. And as a fan, I don't like this. It drives me crazy. I actually want to see 5-on-5 hockey, not 5-on-4, 4-on-4, blah, blah, blah. Nonetheless, I think now what we have seen is it's been pretty well established. If you manage to play a qualifying round game in which you don't have 14 combined or more penalties called, you're fortunate. But that is the one thing. Okay, so that was going to be my gripe about Fiala tonight. Dude, you're not going to get calls all the time. If you complain, you're really not going to get them. You are an unbelievable, as he showed again tonight at times, especially late in this game, he is a phenomenal talent. But he's going to have to let this stuff go. Like, he was talking to the linesmen and referees, I thought, continually. And Walsh broached this too, and Wes is exactly right. Okay, at times there's going to be bad calls that are going to go against your team. At times there's going to be no calls that don't go for you. But the one thing that I would like to see starting in game 3 on Thursday, by the way, Thursday afternoon at 1:30, we get a the one thing that I would like to see is 22 in the Wild jersey just not complain. Like, just accept it, go about your business, because you're too good to get caught up in the muck of the game itself.
And look, I think he's probably the best player in the Wild, and he's been playing so well for such a long time. And then there was a pause, and I'm sure there's natural just frustration to his game, whether he was playing with a lead in game 2 or whether he was playing behind. But you would like to see someone like that, even though with Fiala playing as well as he has and how much I just praised him there in the last 30 seconds, mm-hmm. that you got to have a little bit more self-awareness is what exactly Wes and maybe a lot of fans were looking at. There was a lot of just self-awareness of the situation at hand. Sure. And I think Fiala is a very good player and someone that the Wild are lucky to have. And he's been blossoming, obviously, early on here. I noticed him a lot in that first 2 shifts. There was a couple shifts early on, Judd, where I thought, okay, 22 is just like he was in game 1. He was just like he was in the last week. He is Kevin Fiala, and here he goes. And then, I'll be honest, he disappeared for what I thought for the next 57 minutes outside of the last minute. And the only time you really noticed him was when he was complaining to the referees. You didn't really notice him You didn't notice what he was doing on the ice, what he was doing to drive possession and drive offense and this and that. So that is disappointing. What I am curious, Judd, and what I want to broach to you is because what something you and I have talked about with this Wild team and under Evason specifically is, can they play the up-tempo game? Can they play the offensive zone game? And are you okay with the fact that you're going to make an offensive zone turnover and it won't cost you? Well, look, Alex Galchenyuk, who I've been more bullish about over his tenure, his short tenure here at the Wild, you praise him for his play in game one and going into the game one situation. He makes a really bad turnover in game one. And yeah. I'm not trying to tell you that what Everson's philosophy is wrong, to don't make offensive turnovers and then they'll transition to the worst case scenario. But that is what happened when Alex Galchenyuk made a horrible turnover at the blue line and Vancouver goes down and scores. Now, is that just kind of, Judd, is that just Russian roulette? Is that what you're playing with when you are okay with offensive zone turnovers? Or is that something that is definitely fixable and just kind of an outsider of how this team can play?
So to your point, I think that there is definitely an ability for the forwards to take some chances. And there is a huge ability that I think Dean and emboldens his defensemen to jump into plays, guys like Brodin and Dumbo, right? Here's where it crosses a line, and here's where my guess is that when they break down the film tomorrow on the Galchenyuk play, Declan in particular, which made the score 2-1 Vancouver, here's where I think they're going to have a conversation. Galchenyuk takes the puck and does the dipsy doodle move back towards the Canucks blue line, right? He then, as he approaches the blue line, makes a backhanded, irresponsible blind pass that and oh, but by the way, Miller picks off the puck, which means that the Canucks, basically a top six guy who's damn good, is on the ice. He picks off the puck, goes coast to coast, and scores. That's just dumb. Like, that's not a daring, hey, you jumped into the plate and took a chance. Galchenyuk, it's as if he's almost become a little bit too confident there, and he's not that good. Like, he's not that player. And so I don't think that what Galchenyuk did means that the Wild needs to crack down on the philosophy of how they're going to play all the time. I do think it means this. If you're going to make dumb plays against the Canucks, it's going to cost you. And it felt like on Sunday in game one, the Canucks didn't have their act together enough, Declan, necessarily, to take advantage of such plays. So if Galchenyuk had done that in game one, it feels like it might have backfired against the Canucks or not gone as well. But as we now get into the meat of this series and Vancouver gets their skill guys going, which it looked like tonight they definitely did, you can't have dumb plays. So I don't think that stops guys from jumping into plays. I don't think that stops the Wild from playing aggressive. And they did some things aggressively tonight. The penalty kill early on was just fantastic because it played aggressive. But I do think that goal in particular that resulted in the Canucks' second goal is a really good cautionary tale of if you get lazy or you get cute, we're going home.
Right. And that's exactly probably what it is. I think I was impressed with still how that offensive zone style of play works. Even what Judd, right, that first penalty. So Canucks come down, they score that opening shift, the Wild come back around. And who comes in the middle of the slot and right towards the end of the net? Jonas Brodin. How many times would you ever see, Judd? And I don't think this was coincidence either. How many times would you see a defenseman coming in, sacrificing his own position because he's got a lane, he sees it, and he also has the coach's decision and coach's trust that it's okay to go in. It's okay to go towards the net, even though you're a defenseman. So when someone like Jonas, especially Jonas Brodin, look, Judd, he's a stay-at-home defenseman. He's not known for his offensive prowess. He's not Brad Hunt. He's not Matt Dumba. He's not even Jared Spurgeon or Ryan Suter. He's known for being a stay-at-home defenseman. So how much trust does it have for Jonas Brodin to know that, well, I have a lane, I see it, I can go towards the net, and even if I sacrifice and it goes in transition the other way, that's going to be all right. I was impressed by that.
Oh, yeah. And that's a play where going back to when Bruce was coach, Declan, Suter has long come down that left wing side and spun behind the net, right, and tried to pass out front or get a shot. Spurgeon, same thing on the right side. And Spurgeon, I think, since Dean got the coaching job, has been ultra aggressive at times, and he's got a really good shot, and that makes sense. But to what you're saying, unless I'm just forgetting completely, the amount of times that I've seen Brodin, of all people, the ultimate stay at home, protect Dumba's butt, right? I mean, you know, Dumba's allowed to join the play and does the offensive things that at times get dumb in trouble. But Brodin is the steadying force back there. And for him to come flying down the slot a handful of times this year, maybe, Declan? So, yeah, no, that's exactly right. I also want to say this, because I've heard this discussed about in detail before in relation to the sport, and it's been debated if it's important or not. The Vancouver Canucks tonight were marvelous on faceoffs, okay? They were absolutely great. And there's long been, I've long heard debates about, you know, faceoffs, if you win them, who cares? Or if you win them, it's a huge deal. But I will say this as to the importance of faceoffs tonight. If I'm not mistaken, the Fiala goals that he scored late both came off faceoff draws that the Wild won. And Fiala has that howitzer of a shot. And so I think to underestimate or say that faceoffs aren't key for possession purposes in this series is a mistake, because when you have the right people, now if it's fourth line, that's probably fine. But if you have the right people, the Pettersson for the Canucks, JT Miller for the Canucks, Zach Besser, or Fiala for the Wild, I really think that we need to accept the fact that in those cases, winning faceoffs and getting offense from those faceoffs, lots of times just being shots, is absolutely important. So don't underestimate the importance of faceoffs with especially the skill position guys in this series, because if you get that puck to Fiala quickly, Fiala's got that shot. And if right. you don't, if you lose the draw and then the puck goes in the corner and gets tied up, blah, 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 that is a that's it. That is a potentially big deal. But I just really thought that the two draws that they won late in that game that resulted in the Fiala goals were of huge importance and serve as sort of the sort of a cautionary tale about don't dismiss the importance of winning draws.
Yeah, and I think there is a little bit of a myth in that the teams that win face-off battles as a team consistently over time, you know, or always 1-2 in face-off draws, don't necessarily equate to Stanley Cup championships. But when you're in situations, Judd, when you're breaking things down in postseason where face-offs do matter, when you have to get this offensive zone, there was one today, I believe, Judd, in the second period where I don't know if it was on the power play or not, but X got to win the draw. And in fact, he does win the battle necessarily with the puck drop. But then Vancouver's able to, you know, actually get the puck in the middle of the zone, clear it, and then go all the way down the ice. Those are the kind of plays where it's then hyper-analyzed. We're focusing on it a lot more. And I do think that, you know, like Koivu, even with the new rules in place, is still a very good face-off specialist. I think Joel Eriksson-Ek, in general, without the numbers in front of me, knows what he's doing when he's in the face-off circle. So I don't want to look at it as like, well, if the Wild won the face-off battle tonight, it's a completely different game. And I know that's not necessarily what you're implying. But when you're looking at how many penalties the Wild took tonight, when you looked at all the power plays the Wild took tonight, those draws, when there's so much penalties at their disposal, they do matter. And I think that's exactly what a lot of fans probably are taking away from this is, well, the Wild had what? I think Judge at least six to seven power play opportunities tonight.
They had six and the Canucks had seven.
So there was
one power play goal scored.
So there was, you know, 20 some minutes of penalties called tonight. And look, it's one thing if you're not able to get it done 5-on-5, but can you make it home on the power play? We talked about in game one. What's the two most important ingredients to playoff success? Goaltending, special teams. Yeah. Even if you play as poorly as you do 5-on-5, can you get those two things and you can squeak away with a win? I won't say that Vancouver squeaked away with a win tonight, because I do think Vancouver was just the better team for the majority of this game tonight, Judd. But if the Wild were able to cash in on two power plays earlier in the game, then it is you are able to admit the mistakes you made 5-on-5. You're able to admit the face-offs you didn't win, and the Wild weren't able to do that tonight.
Let's talk about your guy.
Oh, boy.
Matt Zuccarello.
Oh, boy.
Honest to God. Okay, because he is, and I saw tweets tonight fairly asking, is he playing? Which, of course, is being sarcastic, and I completely get that. But this guy is on your second power play. This guy needs to be, I'm not going to sit here and blow smoke up your butt about he needs to be a, you know, great player. But he does need to have an impact of some sort, right? He needs to be noticeable. He needs to be, right now, through two games, it's not close. Ryan Hartman, who's on the fourth line, has been far more of an impact than Zuccarello has. And I just don't know. I mean, this guy had a successful career with the Rangers. I don't know if he's to the point of sort of being cooked. I mean, he's not a terrible player, but if he's sort of cooked at this point. He just had 4 months off, though, okay? So he had 4 months off. He had a long time to rest and relax and get himself right mentally. And so I think now we're long past the point of, well, he's new here, right? He just signed here, and it's going to be that transition year. The transition year ended basically on March 12th. So what exactly is going on here where a veteran player who, by the way, too, is loved by Ranger fans, who are some of the hardest people to please. So like this guy was not playing in Los Angeles and a bunch of people liked him and now he's here and failing. And we're like, well, I guess those Kings fans are idiots. This is a guy who was given a tribute in the Garden by Ranger fans who love this guy. And Declan, honest to God, I watch him play, and he does make some okay passes. But I watch him play in a game like this, in a playoff game, and he's a veteran guy, and he's been to the finals before. And I see almost nothing. Like, explain any of this to me, how you can have, again, how can Ryan Hartman, a fourth-line guy who just works his ass off, how can Ryan Hartman be having so much more of an impact on the first two games so far than a guy that you signed to a multi-year big time contract and at least thought he's going to help us at this point in time? What's Matt Zuccarello? What would you say you do here, Matt, from the old Office Space line?
Oh God, it's tough.
Man. Go ahead.
Because he's my guy. And I thought that when they signed him, even though it was a no movement clause contract, I was like, look, this guy was the man in New York. He didn't get the success or didn't get the acclaim that he deserved, but he was a very important player for the New York Rangers. And you're getting essentially what I thought, Judd, was a better Mikhail Granlund. That's what I was looking at with Matt Zuccarello. And not even, I shouldn't say that he was going to be a better Mikhail Granlund, just a more defined. So Granlund, I think, just could never get out of is he a playmaker? But he has a finishing ability where he could be a goal scorer. So what are you, Mikhail Granlund? You're a center, you're a wing, you play better off the center, you're a better wing. But Matt Zuccarello, we exactly know who he is. And I think Matt Zuccarello probably has more of the respect around the National Hockey League as someone who is an established player, who is a legitimate playmaker, and he's probably going to set some people up. That being said, I was curious how he was going to play with Galchenyuk and Foligno, and that was the initial lines. And you saw, Judd, I think, not to go off on a side tangent, but as the game wore on, Dean was pulling his best. Any other NHL hockey coach was mix-matching lines and hodgepodging lines because why wouldn't you? It's the playoffs. Everything's heightened. You're trying to get up 2-0. You're down multiple goals in the second period. Of course, you're going to try to change things up from what you were doing before. That being said, am I have too much of a guard up on Matt Zuccarello to say, like, well, if Alex Galchenyuk had his worst game tonight, and Marcus Foligno, who I do love and is a great role player, Are we putting Matt Zuccarello in the best situation to succeed if those are his line mates? And that's why I wanted to tell. That's what I was telling you in this games leading up to the series, that if I was the Wild, I want to put him with Fiala. I want to put him with a player that he's going to consistently set up to score those goals. That being said, he had an atrocious game tonight. I don't think he gets scratched or anything, but he was miserable tonight, and we don't go too much into Corsi, and I don't love to go by all that being the bread and butter of any hockey game, but in terms of Corsi, Matt Zuccarello was your worst player tonight. He was a +2 on Corsi and a -6 and created no high danger chances. And if I'm Matt Zuccarello and I know what he's supposed to bring, I want to be able to create high danger chances. That's what I want to see him do. He hasn't been able to do that, man. And it's not a full panic mode button, but I think it's pretty safe to say that, yes, Ryan Hartman was more noticeable tonight. And unfortunately, that means that guys like Matt Zuccarello now, Galchenyuk, were completely irrelevant, and it overshadows the good that Ryan Hartman can bring.
Galchenyuk, I think, was definitively tonight bad. Like that play that led to the second goal for the Canucks was a terrible play. I mean, that was a loser play. But yeah, and Hartman unfortunately got hit by Pettersson at the end of the game, and I think he hit his head up on the ice. And I'm afraid that he left the game because of a potential concussion. So I'm not sure that he's going to be able to play on Thursday. And believe it or not, if Hartman can't play on Thursday, that is actually a fairly significant loss, because that role that he plays as a fourth line worker slash disturber is a pretty big one. I would say of the Wild forwards tonight, going through this deck, the guys who I would want more from, if I'm Dean in game three and Billy Guerin without a question, would be Galchenyuk has to do more. He has to play a much smarter game, a better game. Zuccarello has to show up for sure. Your guy, and I say this in jest, Greenway tonight. Greenway can do so much more, and this is just about, is he ever going to consistently apply himself? And unfortunately, to what you've been saying on this show for a long time now, it's looking more and more like the answer might be no. But, you know, Greenway's been being given a chance to play on what amounts to the first line with Staal and Fiala decks. And Jordan Greenway is in no way, shape, or form, I don't think, coming close to grabbing the opportunity that is presenting itself in, by the way, the playoffs. So I want to see more from 27, 36, 18. And you know what, still? And I know he's a fourth-line guy, but I'd like to see him flash at times. And I think he flashed maybe once or twice in game one. And tonight, I don't think he did. Donato again. Ryan Donato, I know he doesn't play a ton. I know it's not perfect. I know that he would probably prefer to be on the third or second line. And we can talk all we want about that. And I've, you know, been the first in saying at times that I would like to see him get more opportunities to play in significant situations. And there clearly is not a trust there yet. But Ryan Donato can do more too. But yeah, I do think, you know, if you're going to present Jordan Greenway with the chance, and I'm curious to see now in game three if they're going to bring him out and stick him on the left wing on that top line again or start to juggle things. But that's another guy. Playoff hockey should be built for him. Like, Jordan Greenway should look at playoff hockey and say, absolutely, I'm all in. Where do I sign up? And it always feels like he's on the fringe of being like, okay, I'll try it out. But you want to see so much more. And unfortunately tonight, for sure, with Jordan Greenway, you just didn't.
And look, man, if you're the Wild, especially going into this season, I remember at the beginning of 2019 regular season, which again feels like a decade ago, I was looking at the Wild's roster of players that you should keep, players you should look to move on from, players who aren't going to be worth or even shouldn't be sticking around. Jordan Greenway on paper is 23 years old. He's a second round pick. He's still young. These are the kind of players in a rebuilding year you should stick with. You're going to have restricted free agency access. You're going to have them on a cheap deal because most of them aren't like Kevin Fiala's, and they're not going to command big deals in RFA years or have to worry about paying them and foregoing those RFA years. That being said, I don't know if it's just because I've been burned on Charlie Coyle for the better part of the last decade, Judd. I just look at Jordan Greenway. And I just see that I've seen this Cinderella story before, man. And he's a great size. He should be better. And I think that's the frustrating thing. And if they want to stick with him, of course, I'm not gonna throw them under the bus for not sticking with the 23-year-old second round pick. Mm-hmm. I just think if the deal breaker is, can you get better at another position and you'd have to sacrifice him, you do it. You do it every single time. And if that's the camel that breaks the straw's back and you wouldn't do it, then that's where I have an issue. That's exactly where I would have a problem with what he's doing. And he's a big guy. I still think he has a future in this league. Look, Judd, Charlie Coyle's been in this league for, 8 years, and he's probably going to play another 5 to 7 years, if that. He's going to have a good NHL career, and when he's all said and done, he can look back and say, hey, I'm Charlie Coyle. I'm Jordan Greenway. I played 16 years in the NHL. I won a Stanley Cup. I didn't get a Stanley Cup, but I played 1,000 games and it was a great career, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But in these moments, I want to see players step up. And Luke Cunningham doesn't take a shot, and people saw it and people ripped him a little bit for it. Then he gets his chance again on a short-handed opportunity and he cashes in. I want to see more of that kind of mentality. And that's not to say Luke Cunningham played a perfect game tonight, but I want to see that it factor from young players, because this is where you do it.
You don't get done watching a Wild game and think to yourself, 19 didn't work hard enough. You get done watching a Wild game and think to yourself, 18 could do more. And the thing with Greenway is there's no question that when he applies himself, and the size is so great, that the talent is there. I will say that I do think that there is a case to juggle lines going into game three, and that you take Greenway off this line. And I don't know if the answer is to try and flip Zuccarello, who is a left-handed shot who likes to play on the right wing, if the answer is to put him on the left side because you're not going to touch where Fiala's playing, or what. But I think that tonight that Jordan Greenway possibly played himself off that line. Galchenyuk, third-line center, I don't think is going to be benched, and I don't think he's going to be demoted, and I don't think he's going to be moved to wing, because I will say this, he has shown since he got here that when they put him at center, he is more successful. At wing, he just sort of got lost and didn't do much.
Right.
What do you think as far as the Canucks go, is in your mind, Dex, is this the Elias Pettersson that we're going to see for the rest of the series? Because if this is him, you can put guys on him, you can try and stop him. And look, the Wild, I think, plays ordinarily a pretty good structure. All of that being said, the guy that we saw tonight is the real Pettersson. And this is a highly skilled player who is extremely dangerous. And, you know, the Canucks top six, which is really good, did not play well in game one. The Wild did a good job, but the Wild wasn't terrible tonight. And they probably weren't as good against that top six in game one as we thought. The Canucks just went from going 30 miles per hour to 65. So what's your thought about Pettersson's game? And do you think that this is the guy that we're going to see for the rest of the series? Because if this is him, this thing's going to be tough to win. Not saying they can't, and Fiala is a great player, but this is going to be tough. This guy is a sniper. I mean, this guy's got a ton of talent.
Is this the guy we're going to see the rest of the series? I definitely can't.
The guy that we saw tonight, now the guy mm-hmm. that we're going to see on Thursday, and then again in game four, possibly game five. Because the guy in game one was, you know, not scary at all. The guy that we saw tonight was mm-hmm. making plays essentially left and right.
This is what happens if you don't shut down this guy. And the Wild the Canucks are a team that is built very heavily on the top six. They don't have a lot of depth. But if you're able to take away one of those lines, things can get a lot easier. So if Ek or Koivu, and I think that's usually going to be the two lines that are matched against them, if they're able to shut a guy like Pettersson down, then that does make things a lot easier. If you're straight up asking me, is what we saw from game two from Pettersson, is this what we're going to see the rest of the series?
Yes.
Well, if the Wild do not figure out a way to slow him down, then yes, that's exactly who we're going to see. This is your worst night. What we saw today, I don't know if I want to even call it a worst nightmare, but this is what happens if you're not able to contain the top six. Canucks right. will look like a better team.
But they bounce back too. Like in game one, the Wild played well, and I don't want to take away from how the Wild played in game one. Okay. But those top six didn't have a good game. Like those top six, I don't know if they were nervous, the jitters, new to the playoffs, because the Canucks aren't a super, super team with lots of playoff experience. But all of that being said, in game one, they did not play that well. The Wild deserves credit for what they did, but Pettersson had a bad game. Tonight, he looked great. And here's the problem, too, I think, starting on Thursday. If every game is going to be called, Dex, as tight as tonight's game was, shutting down Pettersson becomes incredibly difficult, because they're going to call a lot of what you're going to try to do, right? Because it's going to be hooks and it's going to be small slashes. And it used to be the small slash you could get away with all day long. I mean, nobody ever used to call that. And now if you put your stick on a guy's stick, you're going to the box. So I think that the formula for stopping Pettersson is all well and good, but it's going to be incredibly difficult, because I think it's going to get you penalties at lots of turns. And then you're killing off penalties, and then, you know, the Canucks have the man advantage, and he's on the ice. Now, if they get a different officiating crew and those guys back off a bit, that could change things. But it really just seems like the league wants power plays, And it seems to go beyond any one officiating crew and actually extend to almost a league-wide mandate. And so I'm curious what the strategy to stop guys like Pettersson is going to be when the officials are clearly chopping at the bit to call penalties.
And that's where it's hard for me to draw the line of, all right, were the Wild facing a second team in the referees tonight? Or also, was it both teams had 6 to 7 power plays and one team took care of business and one team didn't? And that's kind of where we have to draw a line with the Wild. That being said, if I'm just looking at the Canucks and you can take away someone like Pettersson, I feel a lot more better with the Wild's chances to come out on top. If you're able to shut down a line like Pettersson's, because then Vancouver only has one thing to answer and the Wild have three things to answer. So then it's just a numbers game. That being said, Besser and Pettersson and Horvat and all these guys are superior to the Wild's top line. So when they're playing well, it's going to be very difficult to slow them down. So you saw two polar opposites tonight. You saw the Wild's veteran leadership, and I will even say great coaching by Dean Evason, that he outcoached Canucks flat out in game one. He did. He definitely out-schemed, out-coached. We love breaking baseball games down like football games. If we were going to break down game one like a football game, it was a scheme situation. And from start to finish, Dean Evason skated circles, pun intended, around the Vancouver Canucks. And game two, complete opposite. You literally saw the Vancouver Canucks use their star power and take advantage of opportunities. And the score only looks a lot closer just because of Kevin Fiala's two goals in the final 45 seconds of the game. As we do kind of wrap up, I do want to ask you too, how do you assess Stalock's game tonight after you saw it? Obviously the first shot, you know, you'd love to have that back, but how would you look at Stalock's game tonight in net for the Wild?
I think it was okay. I don't think it was certainly not great. The thing I liked about how he played tonight was he gives up that first goal. What was that? 24 seconds into the game. The Wild comes back, actually, and from that point on, early in the first period, they outshot the Canucks 6-1. Stalock then seemed to me, after he gave up that goal, Declan, to calm down quite a bit. He made some nice saves. The Miller goal off the Galchenyuk turnover might not have been a great goal, but it's a terrible turnover by the forward, and it put Stalock in a tough position. So I would assess it as an okay game, not a great game, but I certainly didn't think it was the problem too. Like if I was to give you the non-three stars, so if I was to give you the three, right, the three duds, Stalock would not be among my three duds. And because of that, I would come back with Stalock on Thursday. I don't think he lost the net tonight. I don't think I didn't leave my TV to do this fine edition of Judd's Hockey Show with a side of Declan. I didn't walk away from my TV saying, you got to make a goaltending change. And you know what? These days in the playoffs, that said a lot. If I'm Dean, though, I come back with Stalock on Thursday because I found nothing he did to warrant him now not starting. How about you?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was looking at. It was a more rhetorical question of that. I don't think that Stalock's play tonight was the reason the Wild lost. Did he let in a bad goal on the first shot? Yes. Should he have stopped the Alex Galchenyuk turnover that led to a transition for Vancouver? Probably yes, but also then, if Galchenyuk doesn't make that turnover, then we're not talking about it. I think Stalock, rightfully so, deserves game three. If Vancouver scores in their first shift, which is what they did, and then they get another goal in the first 5 minutes, then maybe if I'm Evason, I do have to pull the plug. At that point, maybe I do have to pull the plug. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to go down that road. I think the Wild just weren't able to, number one, slow the top line down of Vancouver, which caused some headaches. And then you weren't able to bury even at least one more power play chance. If you want me to play devil's advocate, Kevin Fiala scores two goals in the last 30 seconds. Well, if we're just looking at a 30,000 foot view of the game, mm-hmm. if you score on one of those penalty power plays, then it's a tie game. That's a completely tie game. So, Absolutely. So it's not that the Wild, I think, played disastrous tonight. It was just they weren't able to capitulate on opportunities, and Vancouver, when you don't slow that top line down, this is what happens. This is just exactly what happens. And it has nothing to do, even with how porous Judd the Wild's goaltending has been over the course of the season, even with Alex Stalock having a better season for Alex Stalock, But let's be honest, as a whole, we do know the Wild's biggest weakness is goaltending. I've yet to look at either game in games one and two, and I've thought, man, if Wild just had a little bit better goaltending, could have gone this or that way. I've yet to think that.
Yeah, and I think it's safe to say, Dex, that in six periods so far, over two games of this qualifying round series, that the Wild's worst period, the second period tonight, like that was the one period where you came away saying they got outplayed. And there were moments in that period where they played okay, but that one was a problem. And yeah, it's just, if I'm going to make changes, so if I'm Dean going into tomorrow's practice to potentially make changes for Thursday, I'm probably taking Greenway off that top line. I'm looking long and hard and probably having a heart to heart with Galchenyuk. I might do the same with Zuccarello because I'm just wondering where the hell he's gone to, but Stalock stays in goal. And if you lose on Thursday and he plays like he did tonight, I'm not going to be surprised then going into game four, if they do make the switch to Dubnyk at that point in time. But there are other changes that I would be making to look, if not to the lineup, then to my lines for Thursday, long before I take a look at my goaltender and decide that I'm going to go to Dubnyk for that game and sit Stalock. So just my thoughts.
Yeah, and I told you after game one that I thought if the Wild win game two, it's a kill shot. I know one of the biggest cliches that people despise in sports, and when we're talking about sports, is when you say it's a must-win game and when it's legitimately a non-must-win game. But if the Wild win game two, I don't see any scenario where they lose three in a row. And now it's an even series. Now we're exactly back to where we started. And whoever wins game three, naturally, is going to have the advantage. So I think that it's still Stalock's net. It would take probably an awful lot to get Devin Dubnyk or Kaapo Kähkönen and Matt Robson in the game. It's going to be Alex Stalock's net regardless.
You know, Robson's not playing, Declan. Yeah.
He went to the bubble, okay? I'm happy that he was able to at least go to the bubble.
Every goaltender's sitting there right now.
Hey, doesn't
Plantari.
Can I come? Because I don't really like
Plantari in the bubble, Declan.
I don't really like how life's going in my country, so I wouldn't mind hanging out in Canada and playing some, and watching hockey and playing some video games.
Canada, head there right now.
Doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, but I do think that if the Wild loses game three and Stalock plays the same, my guess is we see Dubnyk in game four. And that's just a total guess. The weird thing is, from the Canucks standpoint, I would say going into game three, if Markstrom hadn't given up the two late goals, that we would have swung back to, okay, goaltending-wise, advantage Canucks for sure, right? Yeah. So if this was 4-2, Markstrom played pretty well.
Yes.
We would be saying going into game three, advantage again, check mark Canucks here. But because he gave up those two late goals, I'm not so sure now. I mean, he looked rattled. He looked when Brad Hunt, again, Dex, at the end of that game, dumps the puck in and it knuckles some, okay? But yeah. he dumps that puck. Markstrom looked flustered. Like right. He jumped up to stop that thing. It felt like if that had actually been more of a shot on goal a little bit, it could have gone in, and that's not to say that it was some great shot by Brad. That is to say that Markstrom looked rattled at that point. So I basically went from saying early or midway through the third period of this game that the Canucks now had the advantage again in goal to saying I'm not so sure, because Fiala scored those two goals, and it looked like that got into the head the Vancouver goaltender. And I'm going to be curious to see that from the start now of the afternoon game again, thank God, in game three, if he is a little bit flustered by those two goals by Kevin Fiala. So.
Yeah, look, Markstrom to me, Judd, is a top 10 goaltender in the league. I think he's a glue guy. He's going to be Vancouver's bread and butter for what you would hope to be the rest of the decade. If you're Vancouver, you have your goaltending equation figured out. The Wild do not have their goaltending equation figured out long term yet. I don't look at what Fiala was able to do in those last minute, and I don't look at Brad Hunt's shot as like, oh wow, Markstrom's beatable. Markstrom did this and this and that. I've yet to see that. I think for the majority of the game, the Canucks were in control, and then just the box score made it look a lot closer, even with just those last few shots in the last minute.
Right. No. I agree that the Canucks were in control. I'm saying the goaltender looked flustered. And you that
think,
was weird.
You think there's a chink in the armor there that the Wild could attack?
I think that he might think too much. Hmm. I think that there's times he thinks too much. I think between Fiala's God-given ability with that shot, which is a great shot, mm-hmm. and the fact that he's so good, I think that Fiala, and probably to a certain degree, rightfully so, is in Markstrom's head, and that's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. I'm just curious if when they come out and play on Thursday, if we're going to see it be Stahl, Greenway, Fiala, or if they're going to flip that. Because to your point from before, it would be interesting to see if they changed that wing and gave a guy a chance on the left wing to play on that line, because Fiala is so damn good. He's got the ability to elevate people's games. And right now, and I don't know why, I just don't see Greenway being engaged enough to have his game taken up that notch. It's frustrating, but it's the truth.
So. And I think, as we kind of close out here, I mean, it's probably gonna be the same lineup, Judd. I would assume I would be shocked if, unless the only reason there would be a lineup change, and I know Michael Russo reported just here in the last couple of minutes that there's been no word on the severity of the injury to Ryan Hartman. The only real roster change is if Hartman's injured, and then obviously by default you have to add someone to that mix. Is that Victor Rask? Right. I don't
add a kid from Iowa. Add a youngster.
Jerry, probably Jerry time.
That'd be fine. Yes, give somebody else a chance. Do not play Victor Rask.
Yeah,
I can't do it anymore.
As much as I love these 1:20 a.m. Live chats we're doing here with our loyal audience, Judd, it will be kind of nice to do a 4 p.m. 5 p.m. post game when the Wild do drop the puck at 1:30 on a Thursday.
1:30, and here's the good news: afternoon start. Halfway decent ice. I'm tired of these bouncing puck games. That's the one thing. These trying to watch these games with pucks bouncing. I mean, it's fun, but this is the state high school hockey tournament late game.
Yeah.
I mean, the pucks are bouncing. It's harder to maintain possession. They're knuckling at times. So anyway, all right. So we're going to do this again on Thursday, approximately, 4 o'clock or so?
Yeah, 4 or 5 o'clock, probably.
All right. And, of course, we appreciate all of you who have tuned in to join us late night on, Twitter? We got Twitch. We got Facebook. Am I missing something?
Oh, you got all three. You hit the trifecta. That's the hat trick of the streaming services of one of the number ones Minnesota sports podcasts, up like 65% in action movie reviews and up 120% in old tweets exposed from two years ago.
Curious tomorrow?
On Friday, we will be doing Action Movie Rewind Fast and the Furious.
I know. I'm very excited. I'm actually going to watch it tomorrow.
Yeah, it's your first time. It's your first time.
I am a Fast and Furious virgin at this point. I'm very excited. All right. Yeah. We're done. Judd's hockey show. He's Declan. I'm Judd. And you will find us again talking post game on Thursday after the Wild Canucks. Declan?
Pass sheet score.
He knows you once ate an entire sheet cake. He knows your selfie life isn't your real life. He knows what goes down in the DMs. Shouldn't you know your dog better? Now you can learn his inner secrets with Embark, the highest rated dog DNA test. Unlocking over 350 breeds and screening for over 215 genetic health risks. Go to EmbarkVet.com and use promo code DNA, that's DNA, to get $60 off an Embark Breed and Health Kit or Purebred Kit with free shipping. That's promo code DNA to save today.